Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change, and it's always a great pleasure for me to reach across the country and tap expertise from a variety of venues. We have Dr. Michael Pantelin, who's a clinical psychologist from Yale University, with us on the phone. How are you today, Mike?
Good. How are you?
Thanks. I'm just wonderful. Congratulations on your new book and sharing some time with us to tell us all about it.
My pleasure.
You bet. Well, a brief intro. Mike is a faculty member and research scientist at Yale University School of Medicine, where he spent the last 14 years studying cutting-edge treatments for addiction to alcohol, heroin, opiate painkillers, and cocaine. As a specialist in motivational enhancement, Mike has helped some of the most difficult-to-treat addicted people to enter treatment. His ultra-brief, easy-to-learn motivational intervention has helped countless addicted individuals, as well as guided thousands of addiction professionals who have attended his seminars to increase their effectiveness. Michael is also a motivational coach, consultant, and speaker, leveraging his simple yet effective and practical methods from the emergency room to the boardroom to help people learn how to successfully motivate and persuade others to move to positive action. His first book, just released, we're going to talk about it today, is called Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything Fast, and is targeted to help readers help a loved one seek help, to motivate ourselves to make a change in our life, or for those of you listening who are leaders, to improve the commitment of employees to your business performance. So, Michael, I'm with you tracking the Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything, but you're adding that tagline of fast is what really got my attention.
Right.
Well, and
yeah,
you.
No one has time anymore.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Yeah, and you know, when I first started doing this, I needed to boil down what was a psychotherapy that took many, many hours into something that had to happen in 1 hour. When I worked in the South Bronx with some really difficult, mentally ill and addicted people, and since that time, over almost 20 years, and now working in an emergency room, we've really learned to boil it down to its essence, and now we have data that shows that it works in 7 minutes or less.
Well, and in fact, sometimes it's like first impressions, right? Those are the ones that are so lasting on us, so I'm certain in the case of you working with patients, and unless you get in that narrow window, you know, it is a journey fraught with trouble then.
It's just like sales. I mean, you gain them or lose them in the first 30 seconds. I mean, think about how long does it take to demotivate someone? A moment.
Right, right. Well, so maybe you want to take, I know your book outlines very nicely 6 steps, and we want to tease the audience with each, at least a couple of them.
Sure.
Where might it all start, this idea of really being able to influence someone to positive action?
Well, I like talking about it in the context of an example so your listeners can really have something to hang their hats on. So
Perfect.
Let's think about just your typical person at work who, let's say, is doing the bare minimum. We all know that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how about, you know, this is a person that you've had countless conversations with. They're your direct report, and they're doing just enough, but you know that they have more talents and you want them to give them more. Here's how you want them to give more. Here's how you begin the instant influence process. You start by saying, look, I know we've had some tense conversations about this, and I've tried to force you to change or to push you, but I know I can't do that, and I know that it's totally up to you. I mean, only you can convince yourself if it's worth it for you to give more. But let me ask you, why might you ever decide to give more of your talents here? That's the first question, getting people to talk about their own reasons why they might make the change you would like to see.
And quite often what you might find, I know I do in my line of work, is that, quite frankly, that perhaps they're not well fit to the task that you've even lined them up for. So you have a ground to open up a dialogue.
That's right. And they may not have ever told you that had you not really pushed the issue. Yeah. But usually what people say is, well, you know, it doesn't feel good. It may look like I'm not working hard, but it's hard to keep down my ideas and creative energy. I'd love to give more. I'd be more engaged. You wouldn't be having these talks with me. People start to give us their own reasons, and we found over many years that it's not really people listening to us to influence them. It's us listening to them and their reasons mm-hmm. for change. That's why that first question is really important.
So that why might you change, or the other piece of it, you say influence yourself to make a step forward.
Right. And, you know, sometimes people will take do a double take or look at you like you have three heads, and they don't answer the question right away. But you say, no, really, I know I'm the boss, and I would like you to do X, Y, or Z, but now we're talking about what might be in it for you if you were to do it.
Right.
And so you got to get those reasons. So that usually starts a good process going. The next question is asking them to rate their motivation. So usually what people do when they want to figure out how motivated someone is to do what they want is they say, so are you ready to do this? And it comes out as a yes-no question.
Right, and then you're toast if it's a no, right?
That's right. But let's look at it this way. Our theory here is that everybody, no matter how resistant they are, has a little bit of motivation, but they hide it from us. Mm-hmm. And what do you think the resistant person will say to a yes-no question if you say, are you ready to do what I've asked you to do all these times?
Heck no, they've had the no out before yeah.
That's right. That's right. And that's true even if they have a little motivation. But what we found, if we put it on a scale, we say on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you to offer a couple of additional ideas at the next meeting? You know, make the first step easy. And you say 1 is not at all and 10 is totally. It's a rare, rare person who says 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is just by scaling it, you get the resistant person to reveal a little motivation.
As opposed to reveal what's holding them back, the idea of you're playing off a positive pull.
That's correct. I never ask anymore, what's holding you back? What's getting in the way? Why won't you do it? Yes, sometimes legitimate obstacles are there and they need to be removed. But usually when you're getting resistance, those kinds of very logical but ineffective questions will just get you more no's and excuses. So mm-hmm. I actually ask irrational questions that surprise people, lower their defenses, but get them to talk about positive reasons why they might do the positive behavior.
And what's interesting, and I have my book in front, your book in front of you. In fact, for those of you who tuned in, it's Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything Fast, is you then double back, though, with a question of why didn't you pick a lower number? So I gather you're trying to push them forward or support them moving forward.
Right, but doesn't that sound like an unexpected and irrational question?
Mm-hmm.
Right, what are they expecting? Why didn't you say at least a 5?
Five, exactly.
Right? I've been talking to you about this for months. And again, they may do a double take, but stick with it and say, no, you said 3. And even though that's on the lower end, I'm much more interested in what makes up that 3 and why you didn't pick a 2 or a 1 versus why you're not more motivated. Everyone here has asked you, why aren't you more motivated? Hasn't gotten us far. I want to know why you aren't less motivated, pick a lower number.
And mm-hmm. my guess is what you're doing, of course, is training in them a confidence to know they've got a lot of the right things to indeed move forward.
That they have it already.
Yeah,
to tell you the truth, I'll share a secret with you here. I haven't said it on any TV show or interview yet. I've never given anyone any motivation. I've always helped them find it in themselves.
Well, particularly if you're looking to help people sustain the change, right? When you leave the room, Mike, or when they leave your room?
Now, absolutely.
Now, these are techniques that, as you said, you started bubbling this up when you were working with very difficult addiction cases then in the South Bronx.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this was a place rife with crime, poverty, homelessness, HIV, AIDS, addiction, mental illness, and nothing was changing there. And I remember the day it all changed for me. I got to work, and one of our former patients was standing on the ledge of a building threatening to jump. It was terrible. And I don't want to leave you hanging. He didn't jump. But what I realized on that day is that we'd been talking to our patients, including him, in this very tell-and-sell way, this hard-sell way, this you're-going-to-die-if-you-don't-change way. And I had my aha moment almost 20 years ago when I realized that if we're going to influence anyone, especially these tough patients, we're going to have to radically change the conversation. And that's what this approach is about. It's not hard to learn. You don't have to be a doctor, but you can't say the standard rational questions. They don't motivate people.
Well, even your step one, why might you change? I mean, typically people will step forward and change either if there's at a point of so much pain or if they see so much tremendous opportunity. But to get people to keep themselves on the hook and keep themselves accountable, why don't you speak to that a bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a hard process. I mean, we got to get people moving, but when someone is saying no, I'm not even thinking about keeping the work up and being accountable until I get them moving. That's mm-hmm. the hardest part,
right,
and that's
right.
what instant influence addresses. It's nudging them from the no to the yes, or even to the maybe.
Yeah, and the several examples in your book, because of your own line of work and being associated with a medical school, involves activity in the emergency room. Perhaps
right.
you could tell us a couple stories there.
Sure, sure. So, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I was working with an older woman about her smoking. Now, she didn't come into the ER about her smoking. She had some other fracture that had nothing to do with that. And right away, you know, there's a double whammy. People who are smokers are very careful about people talking to them about it. They know what they're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she didn't think anyone would talk to her about it. But when I asked her these questions, her resistance started to melt away. And I remember sort of the chills down my back when I asked her some of the follow-up questions. She said that if she were to quit smoking, the reason would be for her health. And now we all say that, but the thing about instant influence is that it makes it go a little deeper. And when I asked her, well, why is your health important to you? You see, that why question
yes.
is just the best. And she said, because then I would be able to breathe better.
Right.
And I said, well, why is that important
exactly.
to you? And we keep going and going. But it doesn't take more than a minute and a half until she ended up saying, well, because I really want to spend time with my grandkids, and I see them every day, and we take walks together, but they're always ahead of me.
Right.
I feel like I don't spend any time with them. And I tell you, she was almost on the verge of tears. That's what's going to motivate someone, not just simply rehearsing what the doctor said, it's better for my health. We try to get at how health is a currency and what it'll buy her, and she got to it, and I'm sure that she's going to quit.
Well, and I think it's also a confidence builder by helping her see deep down why it would be so important mm-hmm. to change.
Right.
But, you know, in the company context, it's a little bit more challenging, wouldn't you say, though? Because I don't know that I would want to be quite so bold to say you can hide out while everybody else shifts. But nonetheless, you're dealing with the, you know, law of averages or, you know, the changing of the commons, right? And, well, I'm not going
right.
to give up, you know, wasting gasoline unless everybody else around me gives up wasting gasoline or whatever
That's
the
right.
dynamic might be in the office setting.
Right, sure. And you know, there's a whole team of people. But I think the other thing that complicates it, besides just being able to hide out, is that we're spending a lot of time trying to reward the positive behavior with all of this external
Oh, that's
stuff.
True. Right.
You know, and, you know, look, I don't think any of us would come to work consistently if we weren't paid. So it's important to a degree, but sometimes getting too much external positive reward for our work keeps us from thinking deeply why it's important to us on a personal level. So you can hide out, but if someone catches on to these questions in this book and finds you, they're not going to pressure you and they're not going to reward you, but they're going to start asking you the tough questions. Hey, why did you get into this business in the first place? What did you want to achieve? Where's that dream? Let's mm-hmm. bring it back to the fore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Go ahead.
No, please. Back to your medical examples, though. And, of course, you know, addiction is one that requires many times significant rewiring, shall we say, of the person's mental place as well as the physical fitting together of all those pieces. So is this a technique that you found needs a lot of repetition and reinforcement as you work with patients so that they can ask themselves those questions?
Absolutely. But here's the thing. This addresses the motivational part of things, that part of the process when most family members or doctors feel that they have the least power to influence. And that's right at the beginning when the person's saying, no, I don't have a problem. I don't need to change. Who are you to talk to me? And we get over that hump. And that takes care of a lot of it. But, you know, relapse, you're right, is part of the process. However, I found that with such a simple technique, I can teach the person with the addiction to do this for themselves, just like I've taught managers who want to motivate their team to motivate themselves as well. And so the upkeep is not only done by me, but by themselves.
Yeah, or most certainly when they choose to reach out and get others to help them, that it can be reinforced by those who are around
right.
them.
Right. I mean, I teach lots of family members these techniques because they come to me and they say, we've tried everything, we can't get them into rehab. We've taken this away, we've confronted them, we've had a professional interventionist, we've done this and that. And then they learn this very different but more effective approach, and families have quite a lot of success. So in terms of the upkeep, you can also have the family members learn a more positive approach, and they can help keep it up. I mean, the other thing with addicted people is that they try to stay away from us because they're protecting themselves from a lot of criticism,
right.
which is understandable.
Yeah. Right.
It's understandable. But if with this positive approach, I find that patients come back to family members, physicians, and to me much more readily as things are beginning to slip, because they know that they'll have a positive interaction with us versus a negative one. And that keeps, in my view, keeps relapse from getting full-blown.
Well, now, for those people who are organizational consultants or work within companies, though, one of the things that is the human condition is, you know, you call it relapse, we'll call it mistakes, where you need preventative action, or you need to be prepared to forgive yourself or forgive the team when you don't quite get it right. But most importantly, what's your recovery plan? And so, you know, part of your precepts here on the influence side, the motivation side, is to recognize we might all not get it right the first time, right?
Right. Right. I mean, often managers are saying to me, well, I don't know why I have to talk to him again about this. You know, it's the same mistake over and over again. He corrects it for a while, and now he's back again. Part of this process is to know that sometimes you're going to motivate people to get back on the horse, and that's just the human condition. I tell people life's a chronic condition, so you have to get back to it again and again. You know what I find helps with managers? I had this one manager who had used my approach with a number of his folks and really got his office to an award-winning level of performance. But I think then it made it harder for him to use it again because he thought it would never slip back below exceptional.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, try as I might, being the motivational expert I am, I couldn't motivate him to start using the technique again until I said, well, tell me about something that you've fallen back on.
Right.
And let's see if I can show you to motivate yourself to do that. And he was truthful. He said there was nothing at work that he'd fallen back on, but he'd fallen back on his exercise and diet plan, so something outside of work. And as soon as we worked on that and showed him how to use that process for himself, he opened up with it at work and was able to do it where he needed there as well.
Well, you know, back to this, step one is why might you change? And
right.
I think, you know, it's not just the what's in it for me, but in the case of leaders, it's how do you take it to the, you know, 3, 4, 5 steps higher in impact, right? To show
right.
the greater enterprise, if not society and community, what you could take out. Step two, then, how ready are you to change? I like that thought of really shifting us towards, you know, scaling this in a positive direction. What about the people that might say, you know, I'm a 9, but I'm stuck in fear to take those steps?
Well, very simply, because this is based on the old where there's a will, there's a way.
Okay.
Before we can figure out a way to get over that fear, I want to make sure that there's enough will and motivation to use those fear-conquering strategies. So I would still use the same question number 3 and say, why wasn't it lower than a 9? Why is that fear only taking you down one notch from 10?
Yeah.
In other words, why do you want it so badly? And the more I can get the person talking about that, and the more I can feed back her reasons, the positive reasons, the more likely that person is to use whatever strategy we have to conquer the fear.
Well, I think the other thing you said, step 4 would be, you know, imagine that you've changed. So this idea of already getting somebody to see that leap out there of the new world, right?
Right. As long as we have them imagine the other side of the leap. Sometimes people equate this question to, imagine you're doing it. You're doing the new sales procedure and you're talking to the customer. No, that's where the fear lives.
Right.
You want to say, imagine you're walking out, you did the new procedure, and you closed the deal. What would be good about that? Having them imagine the positive outcomes of having done the positive change and having it had it succeed.
Right.
That's what really brings up the fire in the belly, so to speak.
Well, and certainly would allow people to get around the aspect of fear, particularly like fear of rejection. I mean, I suspect you had to go through some of that just knowing you're going to campaign your book to get
That's
your
right.
manuscript accepted or get the book deal.
That's right.
Right,
that's
and
right.
to have to sit there and envision, nope, I know what the outcome's going to be. It's being interviewed on Circles of Change Radio.
Right, putting yourself out there. There's a big fear there, but there's nothing like imagining what good would come out of it. Now, this is a very simple change from the visualization folks out there who say, imagine yourself doing it. That's great if they immediately give you a strategy to deal with the fear, because that's where the fear is going to come up. I like to first get somebody really riled up and excited after imagining that it goes splendidly.
Goes splendidly, exactly.
Yeah.
So you don't even picture, there's no space for the negative things
That's
to
right.
come in. Well, again, one of the questions I'd ask you, Mike, or the comment I made is the fact that this is all about speed, though. And I think your point is you can move through these different questions and these different steps and not give people wiggle room to back down.
That's right. All you have to push them on is to answer the question. You know, say, I'm sorry that they're irrational questions. Forgive me for being so off the beaten path. But what would your answer be here? That's the only part that's a little pushy. But otherwise, you know, people are willing to play along because it's a little silly sounding and it's a little bit of a surprise, and that lowers people's defenses.
Exactly, and that gives you entree. Exactly.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Well, thank you very much, Michael Panilam, for being with us today. The book, again, folks, is Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything Fast. It's available through the typical services out there, but as well on through Michael's site. You can read about it, Michael Panilam, PANTALON.com. Mike, thank you very much. Congratulations on your book, and we'll look forward to tracking your progress.
Thanks so much. It's
you
been
bet.
A pleasure. A lot of fun.
Indeed. Thank you.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.